Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on The Score.
This hour on The Score brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards. Eli Hershkovich going to be in for two segments coming up in about 20 minutes. Hub Arkish, 1 hour from now, on the transformation of the Bears' reputation. If David Gettleman has any shot of surviving in New York and other NFL storylines.
Yo. Yeah, it's crazy stuff in New York.
That guy. I don't need to tell you my plan. Well, no, but yeah. It would help if you explained trading the best receiver in franchise history 12 months after signing him.
You know, years ago, when the Bears hired Phil Emery, at the time they were doing a search and all these different candidates were getting mentioned, and one of them was Mark Ross, who was the Giants' assistant GM at the time. And there was a little, one of the negatives on him, Shep, you remember this? One of the negatives was his work ethic has been questioned. So it was just a tiny little negative. So we started saying, well, he's lazy. Can't have that guy. You know, just blew it up out of proportion.
Sure, of course.
And then I saw Mark Ross on the NFL Network the other day. He's out of the Giants front office and now on the NFL Network. And as he was discussing the Beckham trade, he's like, well, I think, you know, some Giants fans aren't going to like to hear this, but they're going to build around Eli. And just move forward. Whoever was with him was like, what? What? Build around Eli? What the hell are you talking about? I told you some fans weren't going to like it. Yeah, that's because it's dumb.
The heck of a roller coaster ride this year.
That's right. Still, can you imagine what would have happened if we got Mark Ross?
Would have been a problem.
Might have been too sleepy to go check out Kyle Fuller in the Georgia Tech game. Never get him.
God, it's just a bold strategy in the number one media market in the world to trade the best receiver, arguably, in football who you just signed to the number one deal a year ago, carry a $20 million cap and be like, I don't owe you guys any explanation.
Pretty amazing.
I would take a different tack.
The year after you spend a top five pick on a running back.
Correct. So we'll talk to Hub about if that has any chance of success and the Bears' reputation, and we'll do that in an hour. But guys are going to talk in baseball about Mike Trout getting a $430 million deal. Anthony Rizzo talked after Bryce Harper got a $330 million deal. Here's Anthony Rizzo on Mike Trout's contract.
It's exciting. You know, obviously, there's a couple years left, and what Mike has done in the game is amazing, and he deserves it. He definitely deserves it.
You think this is a good sign for everybody else? Obviously, one thing you can take out of this is that teams are really doing the very best they can to sign their own signature players for a long time, whether that's initially good news and maybe bad news, projecting, you know, they think they're going to have a hard cap later on or whatever, but it's good news for Stott.
Yeah, it's, you know, he's 2 years away from free agency and he signs a record-breaking deal. And obviously he's a record-breaking player, but you see Arenado, too, a year away from free agency, signs a record deal. So it's not like it's great that they're not getting to free agency and they're still signing these deals. It's exciting.
You look around the room here and it's like, hey, you know, we're championship caliber team with championship caliber players. This is probably good news for all of us down the road.
Absolutely. I think everyone in here is, you know, pretty much all 2-3 years away from free agency, and you can't help but think about, you know, that's oil money.
That's a good line. God, Rizzo is going to be in for some disappointment, isn't he? He turns 30 this season. He's 29 right now, closer to 30 than 29.
Such a good ball player.
Free agent. They've got team options for 2020 and 2021.
They'll exercise those.
Which they will exercise unless he, of course, signs an extension early, right? That's part of what he's campaigning for there.
Sure.
Arenado signed a year ahead of free agency. Trout signed 2 years ahead. I'm 3 years ahead right now after this season. He'll have two more team option years after. So in his mind, he's thinking that his payday could come as soon as this offseason. Right.
Yeah, but yeah, it's not going to happen unless there's a serious amount of unhappiness that they need to deal with, and on his part.
And so I'm just curious, how much disappointment do you think he's in for if...
Call Mike Moustakas and see how he feels.
Well, he's better than Moose.
Yeah, yeah.
He's better than Moustakas.
He is. I think Rizzo is terrific. Absolutely the captain of that infield. He's not quite the leader they had dreamed of him being by now, but he's the best situational hitter on that team. And he's the model of what they want everybody to be in terms of the BHAC, and you can still have power, but take one for the team, all that stuff. But, you know, there's a lot of first basemen in the league. There's a lot of first basemen with pop in the league.
And DH might be coming to the NL by the time he's a free agent.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be 32 going on 33 if he doesn't sign early and they pick up the 2021 team option. He'll be 32 going on 33 as a first baseman. He's not going to sign a Nolan Arenado contract.
But he doesn't. He knows he's not. I mean, that's our guy Bruce kind of, you know, pushing him towards it and having him say it out loud. Although he did kind of say the same stuff when Harper signed. Didn't
right.
He?
That's what I'm saying. Like, I just wonder what he thinks. Like, do you think he thinks he's going to get a $100 million contract?
He probably assumes that he's going to get that. And
would you give it to him? Would you give him a 5-year, $100 million contract for 2022 through 2026? So his 33 through 38-year-old seasons. Would you give him $20 million a year?
I need to know what direction the organization is going. I need to know if they are trying to extend and maximize the window, or if they are ready to take a step back to eventually take a step forward like the Yankees did. That's going to come at some point, like the Red Sox have in the midst of winning all the titles they've won since 2004. You know, you got to go backwards sometimes, and you don't exactly know when that's going to happen. I think they're gonna let most of these situations play themselves out to fruition.
Ah, the old let it play out game.
I know you and I
loves that game.
One of the most honest segments in the history of sports radio. Not really beloved.
No, by us, we loved it. Let it play out, leading into Can't Do It.
Oh, it was good. It was good.
It was really good.
Yeah, because it felt natural. It felt nice to just kind of let things play out, playing against type as a talk show host. But I think they're going to let most of these situations just kind of, you know, roll until they are forced to make a backwards decision. And at that point, who knows what kind of people they'll have to play first base within the system.
Yeah, I just... Of the guys who he's talking about that are free agents after 2021, right? We know the names. It's Rizzo, it's Baez, it's Bryant, it's Hendricks, it's Contreras.
Go higher.
It's Schwarber.
Go higher.
What do you mean?
Who's higher than those guys?
Oh, Theo. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a pretty big free agent for after 2021.
But Theo, listen, we don't know what he's going to do, but don't you think that Theo and or Jed is running this thing beyond 2021?
I don't know what Jed wants to do. I don't know if Jed wants
to... He wants to run a team.
I know he likes it here, and he's got his kids at a good school and all of that. You think he'll stick around?
I don't know. I'm saying if Theo doesn't, I think it's Jed's job, and
if Jed wants it. Yeah.
Right. You know, I think Theo or Jed... If Theo leaves, I assume Jed gets this job. I don't think Jed leaves with Theo to be the number two at the next baseball challenge if Theo wants another baseball challenge. And I don't know, obviously, but do you think Theo runs another team?
I can't. No, I think he wants to do something else.
I do too. I think it's ownership or commissioner or Democratic National Party or some high business, right? I think he's
something.
So it's something. But so then it's Jed that runs this thing. And right?
Yeah.
So someone of this brain trust is going to be here running the Cubs beyond 2021, who is a part of this, because they will want the job of being top boss for the Cubs and the $200+ million payroll and everything that comes with that. I don't think that you want to pay Anthony Rizzo for his 35-year-old baseball season.
No, you probably don't. You probably don't want to guarantee something like that.
So I obviously love him as a Cubs fan. I think he's going to be disappointed in terms of the market that's there for the guy's services. Think about it. Paul Goldschmidt will be a 32-year-old free agent first baseman this year, after this year. And he's better than Anthony Rizzo. Let's see what contract he gets. Obviously, it'll depend on what numbers he puts up for the Cardinals this year.
And what his health looks like by the time that comes around. But you know, a lot of those guys have been forced to sign shorter deals for larger money, which is why the young superstars are cashing in as sometimes before free agency even comes, like Arenado and now Trout for the second time. It's crazy. This is the second time Trout has signed the preemptive enormous extension before getting to free agency, and he's only freaking 27.
How about him just not being interested in any of that fanfare? Like, that would have built up. We want to talk about what would build him into more of a star if he was a free agent. Just the recruitment trips, the news cycle, where is he going to sign, flying to Philly, flying to New York, that would make him more of a star.
Does Trout have an Instagram? Probably, but
yeah, his dog even has an Instagram.
Oh, he does? Okay.
He's got 2.5 million followers on Twitter.
Okay. Because the amount of fun that Bryce Harper has had for the last couple of years in trolling multiple fan bases.
Dog named Wrigley.
Right. Yeah. It does not seem like something Mike Trout would give a crap about engaging in.
I get that it's not good for the business side. And Rob Manfred's probably the most ticked off person associated with baseball with this, because he's the one that last year at the All-Star game, for whatever reason, couldn't wait to run Trout over with a bus with, if he'd put a little effort in and market himself a little bit, maybe things would be a little bit different, but need some help from him on that. It's like, what did Mike Trout ever do to you? Some people are open to all the cameras and all of the flash and the pomp and circumstance that comes with that. Like, Mike Trout's not one of them. And him, for the second time in his career, agreeing to this deal and the extension, like, I get it. Like, yeah, the Angels are in a rough patch, and it doesn't look like they're going to get out of it anytime soon. But it makes me like the guy more, because he's just true to himself. That's who he is, and he's not changing for anybody.
Yeah, and he's not necessarily looking to go home to Philly or even, like, tantalize that fan base with the possibility so he can draw a few more tens of millions out of the Angels. He's just going ahead and taking a market deal that's all guaranteed, and must be nice. Must be nice to do it that way.
He by the time this contract is over, right, in terms of contracts signed, no American athlete has ever made more money from their sports contracts than these two contracts that Mike Trout has signed.
It's amazing.
Kobe, Shaq, Michael Jordan, LeBron, Bryce Harper, anybody. No one has signed more North American sports contract value than Mike Trout.
Where's Jared Mitchell? Where's LSU outfielder Jared Mitchell right now? What's
Thanks
he doing?
For that.
Sorry. He went two picks before Trout. Randall Grichuk went in between them. That would have been...
They would have been thrilled with Randall Grichuk, wouldn't they?
That's true. Sure.
Trout was, what, 21?
Trout.
24?
25?
I think it's 24 or 25. One
yeah,
or two.
Somewhere around there.
25th pick in the draft.
So a lot of people missed on him.
Yeah.
Yeah. But college outfielder.
You know. Yeah, right. It was more direct.
Hello.
What Texter says elaborate, Spiegs, on Rizzo not being exactly the type of leader the Cubs would have wanted by this point.
Oh, all of that is on the record. Remember Theo was asked about, now that David Ross is gone, Anthony Rizzo stepping into the leadership thing. He's like, you know, let's hold off. Let's hold off on that just a little bit. It's a lot of pressure to anoint somebody that.
Did you hear Lester when he was with Mac and I at spring training?
I did not.
He was talking about how Theo came to him and talked about how they went over last season and specific instances that Theo thought that Lester could have stood up and been more of a leader. So it's like if Lester still has to work on it.
I read about that stuff.
You know, if Lester still has to work on it, then clearly it's normal for a guy like Rizzo to still have to work
on
it.
And Lester has to be told to do it, because that's not usually a pitcher's place to
right,
do that.
Exactly.
But you need to do it if somebody else isn't doing it. So, yeah, that ties directly into what I'm talking about.
Yeah. They've got guys who lead by example and have a ton of clout within the game, and Bryant is speaking more now. But in terms of the guy in the clubhouse who isn't the best player, who's willing to call out the best players, that's what David Ross was.
For sure.
Right? That was, everybody respected him. He was the 25th most talented player on the team, but he could go at Anthony Rizzo.
Yeah, and Lester could go at anybody he wants to. Lester has, among other things, beaten cancer. And
rings and
set
pelts
World
on the wall.
Series records, and done it as the kid, and done it as the big money free agent. And all, Lester's done absolutely anything you could ask.
And has all the ties to Theo, so he's got the ties to the boss.
Yes.
And he's ingrained.
He's also a tough badass of a ball player. So, and even though he has this tragic, bizarre flaw, and when it comes to throwing to bases, he's even figured out how to kind of work his way around that. And he's has some self-awareness and comedy about that.
We didn't
days.
Talk to him about that, but man, it was really enjoyable. Just totally assured of himself.
Yeah.
Knows exactly who he is, even his flaws.
Made guy. I
talked about how he hates losing more than he enjoys winning. Over-competitive to a fault, where he found himself considering bumping his kid in go-karts. He's 8 years old when they were go-karting on a day off recently at spring training. He's totally aware of what he is, good and bad. Mm-hmm. It's kind of refreshing.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's they like to scout people. They like to go after the character. And, you know, even though Hayward has been a disaster offensively, his character and leadership is unquestionable, and we can point to an 18-minute rain delay. And Zobrist and Lester. They didn't know exactly what they were getting with some of the other younger guys.
Yeah, or with Yu Darvish.
Yeah, man, that's just...
or with Yu Darvish.
Such a weird, arrogant signing. Really, really was. And maybe it'll be fine. Maybe it'll be fine this year and beyond, and now that he's had that year of adjustment, but... Boy, it's to get 1 year of absolute trash right at the beginning of it. It's just so ugly.
He, just anecdotally, being around him very little last year, being around him very little in spring training this year,
mm-hmm.
He's carrying himself differently, speaking in English.
Oh, without a doubt.
Joking around.
And you can see it.
Saying that he has had the best stuff of his life in a spring training sim game.
All of it. Good on him for not using the interpreter and being right there and absolutely. No, I could see very, very good things for you, Darvish, but you still had a year of trash at the beginning.
Cautious
in the middle
optimism.
Of your window. And you still had a year of garbage that cost you.
This segment brought to you by AccountTemps. Finding highly skilled accounting and finance professionals can be a challenge. AccountTemps can help. With AccountTemps' extensive network of accounting and finance contractors, you can be sure to find the right person for your exact hiring needs.
Oh, wow.
Visit AccountTemps.com to learn more. AccountTemps, a Robert Half Company.
Jared Mitchell played in 117 games for the York Revolution. I love them. In the Atlantic League last year, 6 homers and a 746 OPS. My God, isn't that the league where they're going to have all the rules?
Yeah, so he's going to be running, what? They're going to be getting used to the 62-foot fastball, 62.5
right,
foot
for the second half of the year.
Yeah.
And he's got
bases
all the...
Bases are going to be different.
He's just grinding.
Man, let's go ahead and get Jared Mitchell on.
Let's do it.
Your show. I'm going to go ahead and book guests for you.
Shep, can you get that? Look, the good old days.
All times.
We'll bring in Eli to help you with your Calcutta draft and fill out your brackets and more degeneracy coming up on The Score. Simba, alive in March for the NCAA tournament. Our little Simba's all grown up to be king. He's going on TV, he's in a bar mitzvah suit. It's adorable.
Thanks, man.
He's our NCAA tournament insider. He is Simba Eli Hershkovich. What's up, buddy?
What's going on? Thanks for having me in studio, guys.
Of course. Even though he's in studio, he joins us on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. You've got trends. You've got takes. You are Eli Hershkovich. Do you still have Auburn in the Final Four? Because I bet on them.
I do.
Okay, good.
I'm rolling with Auburn.
Okay,
don't hate on Bruce Pearl and the Tigers, guys.
Wow.
Okay, good.
Really?
Yeah, I bet on them.
Not Tennessee. I want to hate on Rick Barnes. Can I keep hating on Rick Barnes?
No. I like Tennessee. Auburn and Tennessee in the different parts of the bracket.
Yes.
Tennessee in the South and Auburn in the Midwest. I've been all over Tennessee this season. 35-1, a future bet to begin the season. And to me, with the Rick Barnes thing, you know, he didn't succeed at Texas, and so far at Tennessee, not so much success in the NCAA tournament either. But you look at Jay Wright, that's a prime example for me of a coach before Villanova went on to win 2 national titles in 3 years, a coach everyone wanted to bet against, and that's actually a coach I'm willing to bet against this year. But those teams were able to shift past the Jay Wright, we're not gonna make a run of the NCAA tournament. Villanova was unable to hit a lot of threes before those 2 out of 3 championships. So Rick Barnes, for me, is a guy that's loaded this year talent-wise with Grant Williams, Admiral Schofield. Jordan Bone is the difference maker in the backcourt at the point guard position. Their offense has jumped up around 30 in adjusted offensive efficiency last year to number 8 this year. So you're talking about a Grant Williams, National Player of the Year candidate, that's refined his game, stretching it out from 3. Schofield has as well. And Kyle Alexander, who missed that Loyola game in the round of 32, a shot-blocking center. So I cannot wait to see what Tennessee does in March Madness.
I want to put my feet up and just let Eli go. There are no notes anywhere. There are no computers open.
I don't know if what he's saying is true, though.
I don't care.
Yeah, it's like hosting with the grobber. I'm sure it's true.
And there was a croissant that I put in my pocket.
I was
laughing out loud.
That's good stuff. Good night, everybody. All right, thank you.
Right. So you said. All right. You said. You've got trends as people are filling out their brackets and they're figuring out what 12 seed am I picking over a 5, because it happens seemingly every year and that sort of thing. What trends do people need to be keeping in mind this year?
So over the last 3 years with the number 5 versus number 12 seed, over the last 3 years against the spread, number 12 seeds are 6-5-1 against the spread against number 5 seeds. So everyone wants to jump on New Mexico State because, well, Auburn lost to the round of 32 in Salt Lake City, which is where they're playing this year. New Mexico State, they've had some coaching changes, so it's not like their coach has been the same over this run. 2-6 against the spread in their last 8 tournament games, 0-8 straight up. So that's the darling of the first round of the 12 seeds is New Mexico State. Auburn's rolling going into the tournament, won 8 in a row. They won the SEC tournament title. This was the number 11 team coming into the country. And then another trend that I'm really interested in is the number 11 seeds. 19-5 against the spread through the Sweet 16 over the last 3 years as well.
How about Oregon? That's the 12 that intrigues me an awful lot. They didn't play well at the beginning, but they've come on, and I'm just not sure how much Wisconsin can get their own shot, how many people they have that can do that.
I think the Badgers are a little undervalued in this matchup, and they're the number 5 seed, so the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee essentially picked these seeds before the Big Ten tournament even started, before the conference tournaments even started. You saw that, especially with Michigan State getting a 2 seed and being placed in Duke's bracket after winning the Big Ten tournament title over Michigan. But for Wisconsin, you look at the way they played against Michigan State in that semifinal, just couldn't finish layups, couldn't finish their 3-point shots. And this is I think they're number 66 in the country in 3-point shooting. Oregon's red hot, and they're 2 years removed from a Final Four run with Dana Altman, a heck of a tournament coach. Peyton Pritchard, the point guard of that team, junior now, so he's been able to develop over his run at Oregon. But I think Wisconsin at -1.5 is the line. Oregon's getting, I think, 53% of the money, is still a little undervalued because you have one of the top players in college basketball in Ethan Happ. You have Trice, who could stretch it from 3, the brother of Trice, who was on that Wisconsin team a couple years ago when they lost to the Harrison Twins. I think Wisconsin is a good bet in the first round, although a lot of people are going to be on Oregon after they ran through the Pac-12 tournament.
What's your best bet of the first round? One bet you have to make, one game.
St. Mary's, number 11 seed, +6 right now. So the line has jumped up a point. It opened at about around +7 with Villanova laying 7 points. The Wildcats are a little overvalued going into this thing. They won the Big East tournament title, down 7 to Xavier. And Xavier probably would have been a tournament team if they had at least gotten to the Big East championship game. That didn't happen. But the Wildcats, while they do rely on their 3-point shooting a lot, and they were overall, if you look at their metrics this season, they're still top 100 at 3-point shooting. But over their last 9 games or so, they're shooting close to 30%. So a Villanova team that relies on their 3-point shot and a St. Mary's defense that defends it at a top 50 rate, also St. Mary's, the 12th highest defensive rebounding clip in college basketball, and their adjusted tempo is 7th slowest in the country. So you're talking about a team that wants to slow down the pace against a Villanova team that, while they have a slower tempo as well, they do want to push the floor when they get the rebound. St. Mary's was able to do the exact same thing against Gonzaga in the West Coast Conference title game. I expect it to happen in the opening round as well.
Eli, I hate watching Virginia stylistically. And, you know, last year they go out in round 1. They have had some ugly early exits. Why is this year's version of Virginia different?
See, I don't think it is different. And I still like Virginia. You look at their offense, they've jumped. This is the best offense Tony Bennett has ever had at UVA. So there's the difference right there. DeAndre Hunter, a legit lottery pick. Kyle Guy could stretch it from the floor. Ty Jerome, a good ball handler and a good distributor as well. So Virginia's offense has taken that step up and their defense hasn't regressed. Best team that Tony Bennett has ever had. I expect them to spank their first round opponent after beating UMBC or losing to UMBC last year. That was just the unreal upset, the first ever number one seed to go down. The more I look at this bracket, though, the more I look at the South region, I'm really starting to jump on Wisconsin. And again, it all comes down to being undervalued just because you lost to Michigan State in the semifinal. Yes, I know they lost to Michigan on the road in the Big Ten conference play as well, but they beat Michigan at home. This is a really good defense, the third lowest adjusted defensive efficiency in the country. They defend the rim, they rebound the basketball, and their offense is just as efficient. Wisconsin played Virginia non-conference play in a non-conference tournament, and Wisconsin just lost that game by around 7 points, staying with Virginia. I like that game as a revenge spot in the Sweet 16 potentially for the Badgers if they're able to get there. And I think Wisconsin's Elite Eight run is coming when no one's expecting it.
We've got games tonight. Do any of them matter to you? Are you interested with Belmont Temple?
Belmont Temple, because you might take winner at Belmont Temple to beat Maryland in round one.
Yeah, and I hate to say that because I jumped all over Maryland a couple months ago, 125-1 to win the national title. But they're really young. This is one of the most inexperienced teams in college basketball. Very high turnover rate too. Anthony Cowan and Eric Aiello, very loose in the ball handling department. And Mark Turgeon, speaking of a coach, like you mentioned with Rick Barnes, you really can't trust Mark Turgeon in the tournament, especially with the way Maryland's handling the basketball. Bruno Fernando and Jalen Smith are a really good front court tandem, but their ball handling issues hold me back. The Temple Belmont game tonight is very intriguing because it could be Fran Dunphy's last ever game coaching in college basketball. A historic coach has coached at Temple for a very long time, and the Owls come into this game with one of the best three-point defenses in the country. And Belmont with Dylan Windler and company, they shoot the three ball at a really high rate. I expect Temple's on-ball defense from the perimeter to be able to stymie Belmont's offense in the half court, even though Belmont is getting their freshman big coming back into this game. He missed the OVC conference title game in the loss to Murray State, John Moran and company, last week. Temple's defense is going to be able to spurt their offense. This is one of the better three-point shooting teams in AAC play. Shiz Alston, I really like Temple tonight.
And they're getting plus +3. So there we go. Bet them as an underdog. Money line, straight up.
Get the points.
There we go. The play-in games, it counts the same as the Final Four. People are like, oh, you're betting the NIT? You're betting the CBI? What a degenerate.
I got an NIT bet tonight.
Good for you.
Linscomb Davidson, let's go.
How about those of us who fill out brackets and want to know things like upsets as opposed to betting on a specific game here?
You're in a six-figure Calcutta.
Yeah, that's neither here nor there.
Okay.
But you said Ja Morant. Marquette lost what? Their last four?
Five out of six.
I loved them early. I love Marcus Howard, but the way that they've trended, is Ja Morant, should you pick him to hero ball his way past Marquette in round one?
I think so. And you look at that matchup. I actually wasn't a big fan of Murray State coming into the NCAA tournament because when they'll be at the game in a couple days likely. When teams collapse on Ja Morant, this is one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the country. So, and that's likely going to happen in the tournament. But you look at Marquette's offense versus Murray State's defense. Murray State has the fourth best three-point shooting defense in college basketball, and Marquette's offense relies on their three-pointers just as much as Villanova. Marcus Howard's wrist is also an issue coming into this game. It really affected him in the Big East tournament semifinal in that loss to Seton Hall. Really good defense there, too, with the Pirates. And you look at the way, if Murray State's able to control the pace, that's what a lot of these matchups come down to, is controlling the tempo. Then you could push the floor. Ja Morant is electric in transition. I think Murray State's defense is able to keep Marquette's offense in check, even though they have three-point shooting galore with the Hauser brothers and Sakar Anam and company. I like Murray State in that matchup as well.
Bottom of the hour on the Score, brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Only 5 regular season home games remain for the first place Chicago Wolves at Allstate Arena. Celebrate the 25th anniversary season with free parking courtesy of Kia, as well as discounted concessions. For ticket information, visit chicagowolves.com. We still get smarter about the NCAA tournament with Eli Hershkovich leading up the Hub Arkish at 4 on the Score.
Eli's coming. Eli's coming.
Eli is here. Hey, babe, you're not listening to the music.
Oh. Eli's coming in the car to save a broken heart.
I almost had the audacity to mention this song to Chris Tannehill, but then who the hell am I think I'm dealing with here?
That's what I'm saying.
Tanny's got it covered.
I only mentioned it to Eli to use this for his college show, like, what, 10 years ago?
And I did.
Whatever it was, and he never did.
I did. I took your advice,
Somehow
Danny.
He managed to ascend to stardom.
That would have been the open of every show I'd ever done if my name was Eli. Every single one. Hi, I'm 11 years old. Got a radio show out of my basement. Here's Three Dog Night.
We kid because we love, and we're all genuinely proud of Eli Hershkovich.
Crazy.
He's getting his shine right now. It's happening. Action Network, host of the Selection Sunday Show, going on Sports Talk Live, going all over the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
Blowing up, man.
It's been a lot of fun. This is the best time of the year, easily. The best postseason tournament to me. I know I'm going to offend Speaks when I say NCAA tournament over MLB postseason.
Oh, no, you are not. It is considered by many the greatest spectacle in all of sports. It pays off every single year. There's no denying that it is the greatest postseason event. Absolutely not. Baseball is, you know, I get 6 months, but then here comes this thing. The problem is if you haven't paid attention like you have, then we're all a bunch of buffoons come this time of year.
We just got a call on the hotline, actually.
Yeah.
It was the Super Bowl. It wanted to have a word with both of you.
That's enough, Shep.
Super Bowl's a pretty good one.
It is, and it's NFL 53 postseason.
53 of them, in fact.
That's fair. The NFL playoffs one and done, so obviously that compares to March Madness, too.
But just the sheer volume, like a couple years ago for the first time, I was at a sports book at Caesar's Palace for the second weekend, and just you're guaranteed to get some heart stoppers. That's just the volume of it.
Where was Chicago last year in the first round?
64 teams down to 16 teams over 4 days. That's what's amazing about it. Yeah, NFL playoffs, I love it. NFL's king for me. It is single elimination. But it's four games a weekend. 64 teams down to 16. That is great. Every single day.
Yeah,
four games at a time. Boom. 16 games on Thursday. 16 games on Friday. It's incredible. Saturday, you know, the early game. If the early game's bad, then, okay, it can be a little bit of a dud. And next weekend, if a game is bad and it's standalone in a time slot, okay, you're waiting a little bit. But there's always a next game. And this opening 4 days, especially Thursday and Friday – that's why you're in for me on Friday, because I'm taking it off just to go to a bar and watch games. Because Chicago doesn't care enough about the tournament
well,
for me. Yeah,
you know, me and Mac will have your tournament needs all covered.
Yeah, exactly.
Eli, why should I not take Kentucky to come out of the Midwest? Because I very much want to.
Well, if you want to win some money, you take Auburn to the Final Four. I know Danny is jumping on board with the Tigers as well.
Well, you finally gave me a pick. This guy has bogarted his picks all year long for me, so he finally gives me a pick. Auburn better win the Final Four.
Download the Action Network app, and you could see the rest of them,
of course.
Right.
That's right.
But with Kentucky in that part of the bracket, the lower tier part of the Midwest region.
Yes, sir.
Seton Hall and Wofford, the winner of that game could give Kentucky issues. And I really like the Wildcats. Ashton Hagans has evolved as that freshman point guard. Tyler Hero, really good three-point shooter. And Keldon Johnson can also gun it from deep. Reed Travis, the difference between this Kentucky team is, from past years under John Calipari, they have a graduate transfer at the forward spot in Reed Travis, the Stanford transfer. Kentucky never had this much experience in the front court. P.J. Washington, a sophomore big as well. So you have a ton of experience in the front court. But if you jump ahead to the Sweet 16 for me, that's where I think Kentucky goes down against Houston. Their ball pressure, man, it's ridiculous. Corey Davis, Armani Brooks, Galen Robinson, and the way the Cougars play defense allows them to push the tempo. Again, controlling pace is so important in the NCAA tournament. Houston has an electric three-point shooting team with Corey Davis, no Rob Gray from last year, but Houston's ability to stretch the floor against a Kentucky team that has been their biggest issue defensively is allowing threes. So I expect Houston to advance to the Elite Eight if Auburn gets to the Elite Eight as well, Danny. Facing Kentucky could be a problem if Kentucky gets by, because Kentucky has owned them this season.
All right, so Spiegs is in a Calcutta. I am in we call it an auction. It's the same thing. You buy a team, and it basically equates to hopefully a futures bet, right? At a 20-1, a 30-1, whatever. You pay for a team. Everybody buys teams. That's the total pot. Whatever you put in, you get paid out as they advance throughout the go. So whereas if you bought Auburn for 50-1, you only get the 50-1 if they win the whole thing. Whereas these auctions, the further you go, you get some money back on your investment. What are some long odds teams other than Auburn? We know you love Auburn.
Seton Hall is an interesting team too. I think they're around 300-1 or so. Miles Powell, as much as people want to talk about that Marquette-Murray State matchup in the first round, Miles Powell against Fletcher McGee. McGee is arguably the best three-point shooter as in among mid-major teams, and that Wofford team has the second-best three-point shooting team across the country. So the Terriers can gun it from three. Mike Young is a heck of a coach in terms of creating mismatches off ball screens, that sort of thing. So Wofford is interesting, and their first-round opponent, Seton Hall, Miles Powell can also shoot it from three, and the Pirates have one of the best three-point defenses in the Big East. Their defense ramped up when it came to conference play, and you think about Quincy McKnight, too, shut down Marcus Howard in that first round. So I know they match up, which makes it difficult to bet on one of the two teams in the first round, but Wofford and Seton Hall, I think, are two teams, if they're able to get by and get by Kentucky, can make a deep run in the NCAA tournament.
How, if you had to take one of the non-Duke teams out of that bracket, it's Michigan State for you. Why is Duke going to fall in your mind?
That Virginia Tech matchup could also be scary in the Sweet 16. The Hokies were able to knock off the Blue Devils at home earlier this season. Now, granted, that was without Zion Williamson, so you have to take that with a grain of salt. Also, for Virginia Tech, Justin Robinson, their starting point guard, was out, and he's been out since, I want to say, mid-January to this point. And Virginia Tech's offense was able to get past Duke in that game, but their three-point shooting is spurted by Robinson's ability to push the floor, his prowess for getting out in transition. If Virginia Tech doesn't create turnovers, though, they can be dumb.
Eli, LSU, let me see if I have this right. They have the star back, but not the coach, right?
Correct.
So
Will
no,
Wade.
No Will Wade. I know they're a three seed, but Yale's been pretty damn good. They've got an NBA-level talent, which is rare for an Ivy League team as well.
Yeah, Oni is a really good guard for them, about 6'6", averages 17.6 points per game. I really like Yale. I don't know if I would pick them outright, but they're getting about 7 points, depending on where you shop around. So if you think about LSU, similar to a team that I also hate overall is just Iowa. So much luck in the Big Ten. But for LSU, they have 5 overtime wins in SEC play. Now, you could say, yes, that translates to the NCAA tournament because you're able to come up with big plays down the stretch. Smart's a really good guard for them. He's the guy that got paid by Will Wade, also really good big in Naz Reid. But for Yale, the biggest thing with them is they could rebound the ball and they're able to push the tempo. Both teams want to push the tempo in this matchup. And Yale, traditionally, if you go back to 2016 when they beat Baylor in the round of 64 and then went on to knock off or almost knock off Duke in that second round matchup, they lost by 7 in that game against a good Blue Devils team. So I think Yale's able to pull off at least the against the spread bet here. I like them to cover the 7.
And the thing with Duke that's weird is that they just don't shoot threes. All Duke teams shoot threes, and this one shoots the fewest threes of any Coach K.
16th lowest three-point clip in college basketball.
And that's how teams either lose, get beat, win, go on a run in the tournament. You either get hot or you go really cold, and these guys are college kids, and they're not very good shooters, right? So if someone gets hot, they can beat anyone if they get hot from three.
Exactly, and that's the biggest thing. It's similar to Kentucky from a couple of years ago. They were one of the worst three-point shooting teams in college basketball, and they were done quickly in the NCAA tournament. One year, they made the NIT too under John Calipari. So three-point shooting matters a ton, and that Virginia Tech matchup could give Duke problems if Virginia Tech's able to control the pace. Michigan State, for me, is the key to that region. The biggest matchup is going to be Xavier Tillman against Zion Williamson. Nick Ward, Michigan State's big, had a hairline fracture from a couple weeks ago, and Tom Izzo inserted Tillman into that lineup. And you think about the way Zion Williamson plays, if Duke's able to push the floor, Michigan State might have a tougher time matching up against him. But in the half court, Tillman is one of the best on-ball defending bigs in the country.
I'm scared of picking Gonzaga. And I think it's just because I watched most of that second half against St. Mary's. And I know Perkins has led them to the Final Four before. This is an upperclassman guard.
So Rui Hachimura, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, they've got the people. But, boy, they looked ugly against St. Mary's in that second half.
Yeah, they did. They looked ugly the whole game. And when Zach Norvell isn't rolling from three, the biggest thing for Gonzaga is to be able to push the floor. That's when they're so effective, getting Hachimura around the rim, getting Brandon Clark. Just an electric two-way player, really good rim protector as well. But you saw in that St. Mary's game,
yeah, the bigs were not very relevant towards
exactly. St. Mary's has two of the best bigs. That's why I really like them matching up against a Nova front court that's lacks depth in that first round. But back to Gonzaga, whether you want to take a Syracuse as number 8 seed to advance past them, Murray State as well. Defensively, they match up against Gonzaga because they defend the 3 at a really high clip. But the team I like out of that region is Texas Tech. The Red Raiders were a game away from advancing to the Final Four, one injury away with Keenan Evans. I had them at 200-1 to begin the season to win the national title. And they played Villanova the closest any team did last year in the NCAA tournament. So for the Red Raiders, they have the best adjusted defensive efficiency in the country. Jarrett Culver might be the second most important player in this tournament to Zion Williamson. This Texas Tech defense is for real. Their ball pressure is able to limit the ball penetration in the paint. Then they're able to push the floor. I know they lost to West Virginia in the Big 12 tournament in that first round matchup. So if you look at first round matchups in conference tournaments, no team who's lost their first game in the conference tournament has ever gone on to win the national title. But I like Texas Tech out of this region.
All right, so briefly, what scenario makes you the most money?
Michigan State-Auburn. I got them in the title game. So if Michigan State goes down to our in-state Bradley Braves, which I know everyone here is going to be rooted against them, then that hurts my bracket big time, hurts my pocket big time as well. And then Auburn, the 5 seed, you think about everyone wants to take the 1 seeds or the 2 seeds. That's not what happens in March Madness. This is a one and done. I cannot wait for that Auburn matchup against UNC when the Tigers gun it from three and are able to push past into the Elite Eight.
Oh, boy, the text love for Eli Hershkovich is all over the place. People very entertained. I like this one, though. I love Eli's analyst voice. Great cadence, very good to listen to as he breaks down college hoops. That said, his hatred of Iowa makes me hope his fly breaks at an inopportune time and embarrasses him thoroughly during an important event.
Screw Fran McCaffrey. That's all I got to say to that texter.
Have fun on TV, man. You're making your TV debut. Sports Talk Live coming up. Thanks. Simba. Wait, can you maybe wear a Simba pin if we got you
one? Can you say my name on TV?
Hey, shout out.
I'm the one feeding you all this knowledge anyway. So.
He's got Ken Palm up in the background, guys. No worries.
Don't forget about us, buddy.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
That's Eli Hershkovich. Coming up next, what's it say about the Bears that all of a sudden guys are talking about their culture, plus what the hell's going on in New York? Hub Arkish next on The Score.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh, oh.